Okay, I'm going to skip back and go to 35 and then come through the English to where we are now. Is 35 the beginning? Okay. Translation. After saying this, the sun god discharged his semen into the womb of Pritar and then returned to the celestial kingdom. Immediately after, from Kunti, a child was born who was like a second sun god. Because Kunti feared people's criticisms, with great difficulty, she had to give up her affection for her child. Unwillingly, she packed the child in a basket and let it float down the waters of the river. O Maharaj Parikshit, your great-grandfather, the pious and chivalrous King Pandu, later married Kunti. Vridashama, the king of Karusha, married Kunti's sister, Shrutadeva, and from her womb, Dantavakra was born. Having been cursed by the sages, headed by Sanaka, Dantavakra had formerly been born as the son of Diti, named Hiranyaksha. King Dristaketu, the king of Kaikeyi, married Shrutakirti, another sister of Kunti's. Shrutakirti had 5 sons, headed by Santadana. Through the womb of Rajadi Devi, another sister of Kunti's, Jayasena beget 2 sons named Vinda and Anuvinda. Similarly, the king of the Chedi state married Shrutashravar. This king's name was Damagosh. The son of Shrutashravar was Shishupal, whose birth has already been described in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vasudeva's brother, named Devabhaga, had 2 sons born of his wife, Kamsa. These 2 sons were Chitraketu and Brihadbala. Vasudeva's brother, named Devashravar, married Kamsavati, by whom he begot 2 sons named Suvira and Ishuman. Kanka, by his wife Kankar, begot 3 sons named Bhaka, Satyajit and Purujit. King Sanjaya, by his wife Rastrapalika, begot sons headed by Vrisha and Dumarshana. King Shamatka, by his wife Surabhumi, begot 2 sons named Harikesh and Hiranyaksha. Thereafter, King Vatsaka, by the womb of his wife Mitrakeshi, who was an Apsara, begot sons headed by Vrika. Vrika, by his wife Duvakshi, begot Taksha, Pushkar, Shala, and so on. From Samika, by the womb of his wife Sudamani, came Sumitra, Arjunapala, and other sons. King Anaka, by his wife Kanika, begot 2 sons named Ritadharma and Jaya. Devaki, Paravi, Rahini, Bhadra, Madira, Rochana, Ila, and others were all wives of Anakadundabi, Vasudev. Among them all, Devaki was the chief. Vasudev, by the womb of his wife Rahini, begot sons such as Bala, Gada, Sharana, Durmada, Vipula, Dhruva, Krita, and others. From the womb of Paravi came 12 sons, including Bhuta, Subhadra, Bhadrabahu, Durmada, and Bhadra, Nanda, Upananda, Kritika, Sura, and others. Were born from the womb of Madeira. Bhadra, Kshalya, gave birth to only 1 son named Keshi. Vasudev, I suppose this is interesting if someone's just had a son or daughter and they're trying to think of a name for their kids, right? Then they'll really be paying attention, right? Vasudev, by another of his wives, whose name was Rochana, begot Hasta, Hemangada, and other sons. And by his wife named Ila, he begot sons headed by Uruvalka, all of whom were chief personalities in the dynasty of Yadu. From the womb of Dristadeva came the wives of Anyakadundavi, Vasudev. Came a son named Viprisha, the son of Shantidev, another wife of Vasudev. The sons of Shantidev, another wife of Vasudev, were Prasama, Prasita, and others. Vasudev also had a wife named Upadeva, from whom came 10 sons, headed by Ranjaya, Kalpa, and Varsha. From Shrideva, another wife, I don't know how he remembered all their names. It must have been quite difficult, right? I know I'm a twin, and my dad used to get me mixed up with my brother sometimes. He used to say the wrong names. So imagine what it was like for Vasudeva. From Shrideva, another wife, came six sons, such as Vasu, Hansa, and Suvansa. By the semen of Vasudeva, in the womb of Devakshita, nine sons were born, headed by Gadar. Vasudeva, who was religion personified, also had a wife named Sahadeva, by whose womb he begot eight sons, headed by Shuta and Pravara. And now today's verse. The eight sons born of Sahadeva, such as Prava and Shuta, were exact incarnations of the eight Vasus in the heavenly planets. Vasudeva also begot eight highly qualified sons through the womb of Devaki. These included Kirtiman, Susena, Bhadrasena, Riju, Samardhana, Bhadra, and Sankarshan, the controller and serpent incarnation. The eighth son was the supreme personality of Godhead himself, Krishna. Oh, we've got there. We've got to the root of this all. The eighth son was the supreme personality of Godhead himself, Krishna. The highly fortunate Subhadra, the one daughter, was your grandmother. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The 55th verse says, Swayam Eva Hari Kila, indicating that Krishna, the eighth son of Devaki, is the supreme personality of Godhead. Krishna is not an incarnation. Although there is no difference between the supreme personality of Godhead, Hari, and his incarnation, Krishna is the original supreme person, the complete Godhead. Incarnations exhibit only a certain percentage of the potencies of Godhead. The complete Godhead is Krishna himself, who appeared as the eighth son of Devaki. Om Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pustaya Bhutla Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Sinomini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharni Nevishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Teshitarne Vanchikalpa Chubhista Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So we finally got to Krishna after a long list. I was thinking the other day, I've been in the movement a few years, and I was thinking, still battle with the mind. And I sometimes think the computers are a bit like the mind, right? Have you ever noticed how computers are like the mind? Sometimes in your mind you think one thing, during japa, you try not to, of course, you think one thing, and then you go on to another thing, and then you go on to another thing, and before you know it, woohoo, how did I get there? Right? Hare Krishna, right? So it's the same with a computer. Sometimes I go on my computer just to, do some work, do an email that's important or something, and then I notice something, and click, click, click. The intelligence is gone. Whoops! Well, how did I get there, right? And then I get these advertisements coming up, right? So we're always getting these advertisements in our mind from Maya, right? I don't know if you can get ad blockers for your mind, I suppose, right, ad-blocking software for your mind. And then I got this one advertisement called Ancestry. I don't know if you've seen it. Ancestry, it's really interesting. You can click up your name, right? If you put in Patel, it'll probably take a long time to bring all the information up. But so you put in your name, and then you can find out, get your roots. And I must admit, a few years ago, before my father died, I met some of my second cousins in Oxford. Because I was preaching in Oxford, and I thought I'd better go and see them. And I found myself becoming really interested in my family. My affection was sort of, even though I didn't get on with my parents very well, still, in many ways, I realized the power of, how interesting, my mind was just taken away with it, how interesting it was to find out who my family was, right? Of course, we always like it when there's someone great and when there's someone... some of my family were butchers, apparently, so that was a bit of a letdown. But of course, this material world, we talk about family tree, right? We talk about family tree. So it's an interesting analogy, because we also say this material world. In Bhagavad Gita, it says, Udvan Mula Adasakya Prashvatam Aho Avyayam. This material world is a tree, And when we have a tree on the bank of the lake over there, we have a reflection. So we all know that example. This material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. Therefore, in the spiritual world, this goes on. Same thing goes on. They have ancestry. People love. I kind of find it, think it's quite cultured, actually. You know, Krishna used to come in the morning and his assembly, and people, reciters would come. They'd know all this stuff, right? Just like my second cousin, she can reel it all off. You know, so and so married so and so, and right. And so it is interesting because it's actually a reflection of the actual thing in the spiritual world. Of course, some of these things might be incarnations in this world, but anything of this world that's connected with Krishna becomes pure. So this is, you know, it's kind of interesting. Actually, we have the saying sometimes, as above, so below. That was a term used by some of the early Greek mystics. You know, whatever happens up there, it happens down here. It's an interesting concept. And of course, we say this material world is just an illusion. But of course, as devotees, we know what kind of illusion it is. In my student days, when I say student days, I don't know if I mean student days, D-A-Y-S, or student D-A-Z-E, right? Nowadays, I go along the street and I see lots of these little bottles of these little canisters. They're laughing gas. Apparently, it's very popular now. People are all taking this laughing gas. They don't realize you can just talk about Krishna and realize how silly you are coming to this material world and have a good laugh anyway. But they get these little capsules of laughing gas, and you know, here the government was trying to outlaw it or something because there's been some deaths with it. You know, they laughed so much they died. And there's one society called the Psychedelic Society or something who's, you know, very much against this. That, well, we should be able to have our kicks, right? And of course, that was the same in the 1960s, we all know. And in those days, students, you know, they'd get their kicks, and sometimes you'd get illusions. But often, an illusion would be looking at something and think it's something else. You know, you look at something and you mistake it for something else. Very rarely, from experience, do you get an actual hallucination, something that's not there, right? Very rarely do you see something that's just not there. More often, you just see something and you mistake it for something else. Even if you have a complete hallucination to see something that's just not there, right? It's still based on something. It has to be based on something. So it's not, you know, it can't be complete imagination. You know, you have a dream, it's always based on something you've seen during the day or something. So that's the point, that, and the illusion of this material world has to be based on something. And that's where the Mayavadis fall down, because they cannot explain where the illusion comes from. If that's a cop-out, if someone just says, how can you explain this material world? It's just a hallucination. Well, where's the hallucination? Well, I can't tell you, it's just a hallucination. Cop-out. It's rubbish. It means you don't know, right? Quite simple. Quite simple, you just don't know. You know, let's get intelligent about this, right? So it's interesting, this idea that we can actually learn about Krishna from ourselves. Oh, you might say, hold on a minute, does that mean we can start speculating like mad? No, we do receive knowledge from above. But once we've got that knowledge, then we can apply that knowledge by looking at ourselves. It's like I go into schools and with little kids, one of the first things I say is, I get in trouble with the teachers for this. But one thing I go and say, hey kids, did you know? Of course they teach, and we're teaching Hinduism, it's under their studies of Hinduism, but you know what we're really talking about. Right? So, because we're talking about purified Hinduism. Prabhupada uses the word Hindu Dharma in one place, more than one place. So I say to the children, I say, hey kids, do you know that we say that God's naughty? And, you know, their faces light up, especially the boys. You know, us boys are light, right? You know, immediately, you know, their faces light up. And the teachers are looking a little bit worried, of course, right? You know, what's this guy saying? And then I go on and explain. Let's get the whole. I go and explain that when Krishna's naughty, it's not actually naughty. It's for our benefit. You know, I say Hari. He's mentioned Hari when he steals our problems, right? So how could you see how Krishna, you know, how attractive Krishna, a little baby came, and just at the end when I was singing, my mind was like that, right? And if you saw him as a little baby like this, Brajarani, my mind was like that, right? I wish I was the same with Krishna, right? As soon as we see a little child, you know, immediately it's attractive, right? So it's quite simple. You know, kids know they love to be naughty, right? And they hear God's naughty, that's attractive. So we can learn from ourselves, right? Krishna, anyone here ever had a tantrum because they didn't get enough prasadam? I hope you didn't break a butter pot. Krishna did that, right? It's so simple. But you can't understand unless you've got that knowledge. We must take that knowledge, otherwise we project. But once we've got that knowledge, we can look at our lives and we can understand a lot about Krishna. Who doesn't want to be, you know, we all want to be the center of attention, right? We know Krishna's the center of attention. We all want to be the center of attention, but we know that gets us in trouble. Of course, we can get real relationships, but if we try too much to get the center of attention, we get in trouble. Because Krishna gets in trouble as well, actually, but he's got a right to be the center of attention. He can have an ego. His ego is all, he does everything. So this material world's counterfeit. And of course, it says also that this tree, we need to cut off this tree of attachment to this material world. That's the hard bit, because the easy bits we have to get attached to Krishna. But therefore, we need to shine light. And when I was a kid talking about this material world being like an hallucination or an illusion, I remember that we had some curtains with little flowers on, and at night I used to watch them. They used to become Dracula and little faces and things like that, and I used to get scared, right? Now, when it was dark, that's easy to do. But when it's bright light, it's not so easy to do, right? So in the darkness of this world, you know, it's easy to mistake one thing for another. The Guru shines light. Srila Prabhupada shone that light of the Bhagavatam on us to open us up. And we need that intelligence. Intelligence, actually, I was going to discuss this in this class. I don't know if I've got time to discuss much, but intelligence is two things. Intelligence is sometimes defined, nasato vichite bhava, to have that distinction, black and white. Right? This is right, this is wrong. Intelligence is another thing. Intelligence is, this is opposite perspective, to see things in perspective. So there's two definitions of intelligence. One is black and white. There's times when you say, that's not on, right? You've got to be clear. You know, it's a line in the sand or in the stone, right? It's firm. Anyone who works with children knows there's certain lines you don't mess around, right? There's other times when you have to see things in perspective, because otherwise we become too rigid and we exclude. If you're too much black and white, sometimes you exclude. And if you don't have enough black and white, sometimes we include too much. We shouldn't include. Right? So you need to, you know, on your computer print out, sometimes you've got it in color. Sometimes you've got black and white or you've got grayscale. Right? Sometimes you need black and white. I think I told you once, I was told by someone, oh, Indriyesh, we can't get too fanatical. The absolute truth is not black and white. I said, it is. It's Krishna and Balaram. That was on Balaram's appearance day as well. So sometimes the truth is black and white. But if we sometimes, when we apply black and white, we can become a fanatic if we apply it wrongly. There are times, but if we apply it wrong, we can exclude something that needs to be included. Just like in Mayavadi, they exclude the whole material world. They exclude everything, right? We can't use the material. It's from 1918, right? But we take it, probably included it, right? But we don't want to take that too far and include boozing and things like that. So you know, we have to have the black and white. Sometimes we have to reject. Sometimes we have to see the... Just like, you know, I've said this before, three modes of material nature. You know, many times we're saying, oh, you know, we shouldn't, you know, we even the mode of goodness is terrible. We've got to transcend the mode of goodness. Well, come on, I'd rather be in the mode of goodness if you thank you very much, right? I know I have to transcend it, but I'm quite, you know, if I can get a bit of mode of goodness, I'm doing really good, right? So, you know, when you're at the top of the mountain, everything is down. But we're not at the top of the mountain. We're not at the top of the mountain. So we have to see when we're, where we are on the mountain, above us, the shades, the 5 million shades of grey, right? So we have to see where we are and use those two types of intelligence appropriately. And it sort of comes up with these things, with this subject of incarnations. Also kirtan, you know, like from Srila Prabhupada said, there's no hard and fast rules. But at the same time, when I was at the schools, we had to chant Jai Shri Krishna and preferably Prabhupada's pranams as well, but not necessarily for a shorter time, but at least Jai Shri Krishna. Because if you don't sing Jai Shri Krishna, you don't get the mercy. It's not kirtan. It's not kirtan. You can't jump over. You've got to go through Lord Chaitanya. So we don't just start chanting, you know. There's no hard and fast rules at the same time. There are hard, right? You have to see from two different, you know, means you can chant here, chant there, right? Chant at work, you know, but at the same time. So we have to be able to see, we have to sort out the wheat from the chaff, be black and white, but sometimes we also have to think and look at the categories. I was going to mention in this slightly different subject, but language. I want to come on the subject of language because there's two aspects on this. One aspect is we do not have to be a Sanskrit scholar like the Maivadis say, right? Unless you're a Sanskrit scholar and born in a Brahmin family, no hope, you know, you're all excommunicated, right? So Srila Prabhupada very clearly says, no, you don't have to use Sanskrit. He gives that example. If the house is on fire, you get the message, right? You're on top of the roof. Doesn't matter which country you're in, the people down below get the message. Help! Right? Right? And the fire brigade come, right? I'm sure you, if you, in whatever temple you go to, even if the people don't speak English and you're hungry, you'll get the message you want prasad, right? Right? When you've got the heart, you know, when you speak with the mind, you know, the mouth, the ears hear. When you speak with the heart hears, right? When you speak with the heart hears. You'll get a message across. Srila Prabhupada says bhakti is not dependent on the language. However, that doesn't mean the language isn't useful. Just like bhakti is not dependent on gyan, it's not on chag, or renunciation knowledge, but in the beginning it's necessary. So in the same way, it might not depend on language, but language is important. And it's actually said amongst scholars and psychologists and people, educationalists, that the more vocabulary a person has, the more mature they are, the more self-developed they are, the more they're able to handle themselves in this world. Because you get to the, you know, the fine nuances of life. You have language, you know, just like we have many words for, you know, the same word, but there's lots of variations, right? Like nowadays, you know, it used to be that we said, we used to use different words, didn't we? Didn't we? Aren't we? Can't we? Now it's all been replaced with in it. Instead of saying we had a nice kirtan, didn't we? We said we had a nice kirtan in it. Right? Now it's wrong to say in it, in it. Oh, sorry. I just said in it, in it, in it. All right. Didn't I? All right. So many people are concerned about this, and it might be we're getting a little pompous and we're getting a little critical, but in one sense, there's some truth in it, because we're not thinking in it. We're not thinking about what we're saying. We're not aware. We're not conscious. We're not conscious. And it's interesting, you know, when I went to a school, there's a grammar school, right? The first thing you learn is grammar. Same in the Vedic culture. First thing you learn was one of the ceremonies is when you write your first letters, right? It's one of the samskaras. Sanskrit is important. Bhakti is not dependent, but your language is important. The way we communicate is important. Using words is important. For instance, if someone comes to see me and says, and they're late for a meeting, I'm quite strict on this, they're late for a meeting, and they say, sorry, I met someone in the corridor, I had to speak to them. You didn't have to speak to them. It's philosophical. Your language shows your mindset. You didn't have to speak to them. You chose to speak to them. Right? You might come to a meeting, and, you know, when I had an office here, and I don't work here anymore, but, you know, you come to my office, see me, and you say, I met someone on the way, they were a little distressed, I had to speak to them. Now, it could be that, good, they're distressed, they really need it. But it might mean, you know, the meeting might be more important, right? You could have choice and say, I know you've got some problems, I've just got a meeting, see you in a minute, I want to be there on time, I'll phone you afterwards, right? But it's not you have to. Have to means we're not taking responsibility, that we have choice. Krishna's given us choice. We're the ones that turned away from Krishna. So our language often shows our mentality, and therefore to refine language and to think about our language can be a way to help our self-development. Of course, if we're always talking about Krishna, if the word Krishna always appears, that's a great sign. But at the same time, it's important. And this word incarnation, can someone tell me why? I sometimes get a bit embarrassed with classes when people ask questions, but I'm going to ask, why is incarnation not such a good word? Yes. Becoming flesh, yes. As you know, we say carnal desire. It's the thing we don't think about during japa, right? Carnal desire means, you know, it's usually sexual desire, right? Usually. Carnal. It means flesh. You have carrion crows, right? You also get the word carrion. Crows eat dead flesh. See how everything ties in together? It's mentioned in the first, how we're not like crows, right? Crows go to rubbish, they eat horrible things, right? So actually the word carrion is sometimes mean to something that's disgusting. We say this material world is disgusting. It is, isn't it? The flesh is pretty disgusting. So incarnation, we can use the word, but it's not the best word because it could mean God comes in flesh. And that's what the Mayavadis say. Albeit flesh in the mode of goodness. Flesh in the mode of goodness. Right? It's all ignorance, of course. It's all ignorance. That's the black and white, right? The black and white, it's all ignorance. Intelligence, seeing in perspective, mode of goodness is better. But it's all ignorance. So that is definitely something we need to be very sure about in our preaching. Mudo yang namajati, what's it? Manishim tanamashutam. People think that Krishna takes a body. Actually, it's the grossest. It's the grossest offense, isn't it? Here we are in a body and we think Krishna takes a body, albeit in the mode of goodness. Isn't it offensive? Isn't it horrible? It really is. Isn't it just low class? Low class? To think someone's just like me, right? Shishi Radhigo Kulananda Ki. So the word we prefer, Krishna's looking great today, isn't he? And deities look fantastic. The word, of course, we use is avatar. It's a word that students know does because of that film that came out, and it means one that comes down. There's one difference, though, black and white. When we come to this, we take it. Krishna has unlimited incarnations, right? So do we. Not all at once. We're not that powerful, one after another, right? Try everything, right? Krishna comes amongst the animal species. He incarnates amongst the animals as well. Srila Prabhupada says that. He's concerned about them. We do the same thing, but there's a difference. When we come down, we really get down, right? Krishna's blue and we get the blue, so we get down. We come down, we lose our natural self. Krishna doesn't. That's the difference. Just like if you're in a prison, I'm sure none of you have been into prison, unless you were a devotee in the early days. I was just remembering this morning when I was arrested on Oxford Street. I did a runner and the policeman, the rugby tackled me in Oxford Street. All for Krishna. So sometimes someone's in prison. And in the old Vedic system, of course, you had a king. So the king comes in. As a king, he's telling people you must be punished. But as a king, he also comes to the prison and tries to rectify the prisoners. So someone sees him coming in. Prisoner sees the king coming in. Says, hello, mate. What are you in for then? In it. What are you in for then? What have you done wrong? Right? Naturally, the prisoner thinks, Manyate Jagat. He thinks that guy's done something wrong. But the king can give me the keys, I can go in, I can go out. And he's got his real life. But he can still come into the prison. So just because someone's great, doesn't mean they can't show less of themselves, or less of themselves, right? Even Rama went and dressed as a common man so he could go amongst the kingdom and see what people were saying, right? So a millionaire can also become a guy with just a couple of quid, right? It's not limited. Krishna comes as us. We're a part of Krishna. Krishna's the greatest. He comes as the smallest as well. So that's the analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives. And, of course, another point is that we can learn from this. It's quite interesting. In education, They sometimes say that you should, whatever you're teaching, not only should you teach it, but that teaching should inform the way you teach. Right? We've got teachings and we teach them, but those teachings inform the way we teach, the way we get the message across. And what does Krishna do? Krishna comes down. And I've mentioned this before, when I go into with small children, I get down with them. I don't stand above them. You know, what's it like being a kid and all these adults, you know, looking over you? Right? Right? We do the same in religion, you know, big God standing over us, no? No, I get down with them. I get into their world. I find out, when we preach to people, find out who they are, what they like. I'm not just out of a, you know, I'm better than them, I'm fooling them, I'm tricking them. Genuinely, learn about people. Find out about their lives. And then with children, you find out where they are, and then you come up with them. Let's go on an adventure together. Right? So when we're preaching, we need to know where people are at, and then come on a journey, bring them up. Get down with them, walk amongst them. Of course, in one sense, we can't get too close. Right? Just like when we're with children, right? I've seen people when they're preaching with children, then they become like little kids and they've lost it, right? You ever seen devotees do that? They're, you know, they're preaching sometimes, they just completely lose it. You know, all the boundaries are gone. The adult has to be there, right? There's certain things you can't do with children, inappropriate. The adult has to be there. So Krishna's the same, right? Krishna can remain as he is and he can come down and he's still in charge. We have to do the same thing. We have to get down. As a Christian, you know, brought up a Christian, we're told that Jesus walked amongst men, right? So we have to get down, be with people. I was in here one time, about 6 months ago. Now, I can stand to be corrected on this, but there was a man at the front there crying, and he was crying like a child. I think he looked like he was Tamil. Now, I know it's an offense to cry in front of the deities. I know that. But when I heard him crying piteously like that, and I just got a school coming, so I wasn't sure what to do. But I wanted to go and say, if it is an offense, at least take him outside and say, obviously, whether he'd lost someone, it sounded very painful. The devotee came up to me and said, you shouldn't cry in front of the deities. And I thought, is that the first thought that comes in your mind? It might, of course, I've discussed this with people. I sometimes not quite sure how that applies, but maybe we can discuss it another time or later. But my thought is, what's the real important thing? That person is suffering. When a child is suffering, you know, you go and sit next to them. Even if they don't want to speak, you sit next to them. You be with them. They might not want to speak. You be with them. And you know what happens? Even if they're angry or they're upset, after a little while, they'll open up. So we have to be with people. They won't open unless they open their, you know, unless we make a connection with them. We're not going to be able to preach. So we have to be with people. We learn that from Krishna, that Krishna comes down to us. At the same time, we mustn't lose our potency. Right? We have to be careful when we're preaching, right? When I've been to schools, I've even been down the bar afterwards, right? I made a couple of programs as well, right? I went down the bar and people said, do you want to come for a drink? I said, nah, just an orange juice, please. And, you know, so I went down and I made some preaching programs, because after half an hour, when it was getting a little wild, I left, right? It wasn't exactly Balaram drinking Varuni. So Srila Prabhupada, what's Krishna's Paritanaya Sadhunam? Two things. He comes down as an incarnation to rescue the devotees. That's the main thing. And as a sideline, he kills a few demons. Srila Prabhupada says, when you go shopping, you want to buy something in the market, while you're there, you see something else, you think, oh, I'll get it at the same time. Right? It's not your main thing. So Krishna's main thing is to save the devotees, and he kills the demons. And Srila Prabhupada says in this connection, this point is being made, when he comes in incarnations, he only has the potency that's necessary at the time. Again, just like if you go into a preaching program, the people are not really that bright. Don't start giving high philosophy. You just give prasadam. You only display what's necessary. So Krishna only displays what's necessary in the different incarnations. Therefore, let's see if I can remember this. Maybe you can help me. He comes, fame. How does Krishna display his fame? As Rama. And isn't that true? Most of the children in this country know about Rama and Sita. So he comes, and also, not so sure about this one, is Dhanvantari. Dhanvantari is also, Ayurveda is becoming pretty famous, right? Dhanvantari is also showing God's fame. Knowledge, he comes as, who is it? Dattatreya, Matsya, four Kumaras, and Kapila. Strength, Parishuram, and the Sringadev. Power, right? So he shows his power. As someone that can bring out faith in people, Buddha, Varahadev, Narada Muni, empowered incarnation. Those are something we have to try and do, right? To instill faith in people in Krishna. And how did Varaha do it? He got down, right? He got down. Lifted the earth from a mucky place. Right? Of course, he's like a lotus leaf doesn't get wet in the water, right? Stays above the water. So we have to be able to stay above. But we have to still go down. So that's the job of the incarnations, to deliver the devotees and to destroy the miscreants. Actually, Srila Prabhupada also says, not only do we have to destroy the demons, we have to destroy their propaganda. Hitler was famous for propaganda. He had a big war machine, but if he hadn't had the propaganda, he wouldn't have got it, right? So Srila Prabhupada, very clear, I'm sorry I haven't got the quote, but he very clearly says we have to destroy that propaganda. What's that propaganda? That propaganda is this scientific theory, the theory of science. We have to destroy that. We want to give them Krishna consciousness, but what people have got doubts, they've got attachments. We have to cut those. We have to cut this tree. And therefore, we have to be very strong on that, because that's causing a lot of damage. I don't know if anyone saw, there was a beautiful video I saw yesterday about, I don't know if it was devotees in, I don't know if it was Hungary or Budapest or something, they were chanting to the migrants, children. Has anyone seen that? There was a little girl on the top, and she was just so happy. She was like this and clapping, right? And the devotees were singing. So we're all migrants in this world. We've all been kicked out. We're all refugees. They're looking for shelter. They're not going to get it. They might get some temporary shelter, but they're never going to get shelter. Wherever we go, there's no shelter. So everyone's a migrant. It was wonderful. So we have to. Krishna's the only shelter for us all. And of course, Krishna, we could go into this a lot more. I apologize, I didn't have. Krishna is, of course, Avatari. He's the source of all incarnations. Krishna consciousness is completely inclusive. We have everything. And that doesn't mean we just have Krishna, because Krishna includes everything. So we have all the incarnations. We know the position of all the demigods. We know the position of everything in this world. So we actually include everything. But Krishna is the sweetest. I sometimes get a little criticized because I go into schools and I consider it. I go into schools and maybe I'm not such a good preacher, but I just, under Hinduism, you know. But we're telling the kids about Krishna. We're telling them they're not the body, you know. And we might tell them about I have to tell them my body philosophy. But who do you think they like? Come on, who do you think they like? Krishna. Because the heart has to speak. If we've got Krishna in our heart, we'll give Krishna. And just like one boy asked, I said, what do you know about Hinduism? He puts his hand up, he says, I know, no, talking about, he says, I know God comes in different incarnations. And he said, I know about, he comes as a lion. I was amazed, 10 years old. And then later on, Yoga Maya, when I was working here, one of my staff, she told me, he was next to the lake. And he said, this is a great place for Matsya Avatar to come. And then he turned to her and he says, you know what? In a previous lifetime, I lived here. So, amazing. So Krishna's the sweetest. And we have to preach that. We have to be able to preach that. They accuse us, oh, you're being, you know, you're not inclusive. You're cutting out others. We're not. Krishna includes everyone else. If you make everything equal, you're missing something out. You're missing the hierarchy. We have both. We say everyone's equal, we can all be equal to God, we say, you know. But we also say, if you want to be complete, you have to include the hierarchy. And Krishna's the greatest because he includes everything, including his sweetness, which attracts everyone, which is being given by Lord Chaitanya. Accessible. Any questions, please? Problem? Yeah. How do we explain Lord Chaitanya? How would you explain it? I'm passing the buck. we understand that we can't get Krishna except through Lord Chaitanya in this age. Not possible. Of course, Krishna can be the topmost, and he can even go greater as well, right? He can be Avatari. Krishna can be the greatest, and Lord Chaitanya, because Radharani is even greater. He's got the mood of Radharani. He can be even greater. But certainly we can't skip out Lord Chaitanya in this age. That's why we must always chant Jai Shri Krishna before we have a kirtan. Otherwise we wouldn't have any access to Krishna. Krishna says, surrender unto me. He's like a father, right? Very strict. But he says surrender, but people didn't surrender, so Lord Chaitanya came. He gave us another chance. I don't care if you surrender, just chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam. Very, very merciful. So we mention, actually, Narayan Rishi are the incarnations of renunciation. So Lord Chaitanya is also a symbol of renunciation. But why did he renounce? Simply to, out of compassion for the living. He gave up family life. We think that's, what's that? Give up family life, right? But he had wonderful family life, but he gave it up to save us all. So, compassion. I was actually thinking that we say the devotees are full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls, but to each other we're mean as anything sometimes, right? Sometimes we're mean as anything to each other, but we're actually meant to be compassionate. And I'm a fallen conditioned soul. I want people to be nice to me. So, yeah. So compassionate. It seems that he's, you know, Radharani's compassion is greater than Krishna's. So we have, not that we like to talk about Radharani, but we've been given Radharani's mercy in the form of Lord Chaitanya, which is so easy. She's got the compassion of a mother. She forgives us. Yes. Yeah. Is all science wrong? No, not all science is wrong, but it crosses a, let's see, in perspective. From black and white, we could say science is wrong. Not all wrong. Science means knowledge, but it crosses the line at some point. There's certain rules. I'm a physicist, you know, so I know, you know, I learned all the rules, Newtonian mechanics, you know, there's rules how you can tell how things work in this world, and there's laws. Those laws are real. But we have to go further and say who made those laws. So again, it's like the king. If the king comes to the prison, you think that king is bound by the laws, you're wrong. The king's not coming to the prison bound by the laws. He can make the laws. It doesn't mean he doesn't have laws. It doesn't mean he's an anarchist. You know, some people think God's, especially, you know, the old festival goers think Krishna's an anarchist. No, he has laws. But he can be an anarchist as well. So science, where science falls down is there's a person that makes the laws. And if there's a person that makes the laws, he can break those laws. Not only that, he's got more subtle laws called karma, and he can break the laws. Okay? So the scientists fail to see the subtle laws, and they fail to see that Krishna is not bound by, there's someone that's not bound by those. He makes the laws, but he can break those laws. Those laws don't come from nothing. Just as in the laws in society don't come about by chance. In fact, anyone who studies law is quite difficult. It takes great intelligence and wisdom. And we're not against science, but we are against science when it says, and sometimes they say that. They say, you know, I remember Sariputta Prabhu saying that, late Sariputta, a great loss when he left. He said he went to one scientific conference, I think it happens in many. He says, the first thing is, we're not going to talk about God in this conference, right? So God's a priori, I think they say in science. You know, we've cut out God from the very beginning. So if we're going to explore, I mean, we need to explore. If we want to know the truth, we've got to be able to look up like children and explore this world and be open. The thing we cut out is falsity. The thing we cut out is falsity. But it seems that science is bringing in a lot of falsity, and we have to be able to defeat that. Unfortunately, the church left, if I can say this, the church appears not to have been able to, very strongly appears not to be able to defeat science. Certain weaknesses inherent there somewhere. So much of the scientific propaganda is, you know, sort of against God as it's given in the church. So we have to give the, I'm sure it's there amongst some Christians, I'm sure they, you know, they have that philosophy. It appears they've not managed to keep Meyer at bay. So we have to intelligently and thoughtfully, not easily. I was a scientist before I joined, I was a physicist, and it was painful to try and question my doubts. Even now sometimes I have to think about things and go through those. So we should be careful. Your point's good. We should not just deny science. We don't deny things. We go to where they're at. We say, yes, there's laws, but who made those laws? And there's simple questions like, I watched that film recently. Sorry to keep you on this, but I watched that film about Stephen Hawking. It was a theory of everything. And there was a man who was trying to make a theory. He was trying to bring together relativity and quantum theory, which are quite... There's two main theories in science, and they're quite opposite to each other. A bit like black and white, and they're a bit like the black and white. Intelligence is black and white, and intelligence is also in perspective. They're actually very similar. There's two theories that are almost based on that principle, and they can't be brought together. And he was trying to make a theory of everything. But and I don't want to be too critical, but he couldn't stop his own disease. His body was completely different. He couldn't stop that. Couldn't stop them because his wife spent a lot of their marriage telling him he's not God. Right? So what has science, you know, when you look, it's powerless. It's completely destroyed the world. There might be a few benefits, but you look at the mess of the world now. Terrible. In all aspects, the way we grow our food, it's got no value. We just stuff ourselves with chemicals because the food's no good. It's a great destruction, actually. And we might not be able to stop technology, but we have to at least show that it can be used for Krishna's service. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your attention. And I hope that's some help with preaching, because I sometimes look at the world and think it's nasty. We need to get enough time for our spiritual things and a little bit of salt for our sense gratification, but we haven't really got, we shouldn't really be messing around, right? We should just be trying to give Krishna consciousness. It's a desperate situation. We need to be focused on trying to give Krishna to everyone. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.